Did you see the comment that Michael McLaughlin left on your March 9th or your post about University of Akron evangelism?
Yeah.
Gotta miss my Purim celebration.
I would love to go to a Purim celebration.
A what celebration?
Purim. It's where they celebrate being let out of not getting executed by Haman. The Book of Esther.
Yeah, okay.
And every time and they read the Esther story, and every time they say Haman, you got to go and hiss and boo. That was in the good hiss and boo. Hiss. Michael Coughlin's hilarious.
Yeah, I think I'm going to the Arnold Classic. Maybe I got to see if I can get that day off.
I had to call Walmart. I'm going to try and see about passing out some tracks in front of Walmart.
You can do it on the sidewalk by the street.
Well, nobody goes there in Akron.
Nobody goes to the Walmart in Akron?
No, they don't go to the sidewalk. It's like by a main road. But like,
don't you have a mall?
A mall?
Yeah, like a mall.
Like an inside mall?
Yeah.
That you can't go past tracks out at because it's private property? That kind of a mall?
Well, who said you can't? Yeah, who said? Who said you can't pass out tracks?
I don't know. It's private property.
So is Walmart.
Yeah, but Walmart lets like the Jehovah's Witness and the Boy Scouts and all that crap pass crap out. So I'm going to go talk to them and find out how I get scheduled to pass crap out.
You shouldn't say crap when you're talking about
stuff.
Tracks.
Stuff.
It's like saying shallow when you're talking about giving the gospel to people.
Well, I didn't know how to, what's the opposite of in depth? I mean, you're not going as far in depth.
You're being simple.
Simple.
Concise.
Yeah. Concise, shallow.
Not shallow.
The shallow end of the pool. I understand. Maybe it has the wrong connotation.
Like in that.
I'm just trying to protect you.
Thanks, man.
I don't want somebody to get the wrong impression. You know, somebody sent me a message today concerning, I guess, Ray Comfort just put out a new Way of the Master or Living Waters video the other night.
Yeah.
Talking about evangelism. And in the beginning, he talks about how it's a reproach. Now, I guess you could take this one of two ways, obviously. But the guy saying that street evangelists need to call Ray Comfort to repent for his rebuking of other street evangelists who use amplification. Because he says, and what he says is, it's like 30 seconds in the beginning of it, and he shares this little clip with me and other people that he sent this to. And he said that Ray Comfort says that he finds that when sharing the gospel or, you know, in the open air is, he's turned off by those people who are standing on a street corner with a megaphone yelling at people. It actually brings a reproach to God's name. He has found that what works is doing trivia with people. So you could take that probably without clarification, and it was just a 30-second clip that the guy shared. Without clarification, you could take that as him saying, because I would say too, I don't think we need to have somebody with a bullhorn yelling at people. But so that doesn't necessarily mean he's saying you shouldn't use amplification. But also in that, when he says he's found what works best is trivia, doing trivia questions, that is pragmatism, you know, and Ray gives away money to people like, oh, you get this right, I give you, you know, $5, you know. That's kind of a bit of a pragmatic approach Because who's not going to want to stand around if they can get $5 or $20?
Yeah.
You know, I'm not saying one like doing it is wrong or right. I'm just saying you could view that in a couple ways, that yeah. clip that he said.
I don't know.
Yeah. But he wanted other evangelists to call Ray Comfort out and tell him that he should repent or give clarifying statement about what he was saying.
How about you find full clip?
Yeah.
I don't have time for that. I'm sure I would.
I know. Ricky's having me listen to a debate.
How's that going, by the way?
I'm like an hour in.
Wait, who's having
four-hour debate?
Oh, Ricky's having you listen to a debate.
I don't have to listen to whole, but then it's like, listen to these segments taken out of context.
Well, it's not necessarily 4 hours because there's a bunch of pauses in between for breaks and, you know, and then the Q&A at the end. I didn't incorporate everything. And the clips that I sent, there's one more clip that's like 10 minutes long that I want to address, but I don't necessarily want to listen through the whole thing to get the context.
Yeah.
And it's where he's asked the question. It gets into lapsarianism because he asked the question that it's not fair. They're asking basically, and I'm paraphrasing, that it's not fair that God would choose people before the foundation of the world. But in doing that, when he chooses people before the foundation of the world, he is automatically choosing not to take some others, which means they're reprobate and you're going to go to hell, and that's not fair for them. And so when he asked the guy, he said, are you saying that God is just going to send them to hell without any hope, any chance, you know? And the guy said something about, the guy on the Calvinist side said something, he's like, well, you know, this kind of gets into a lapsarian debate, but he mentions about God foreseeing their sin and therefore they're condemned because God foreseeing their sin. And it is a lapsarian debate.
Oh, okay.
I understand it.
It is. I mean, it's a lapsarian, like, because it's not that God is seeing the actions that they're going to do, but seeing that he's going to, knowing that he's going to, like, there's going to be a fall.
God sees them. Well, I guess it depends how you see it, but.
Yeah, sees them as sinners.
The question is, does he see them as sinners and does he not? And is that kind of the basis? So, those who would be supra infra lapsaria would say, well, no, God doesn't see them as sinners. He just ordains them. Because that's the logical connection, that God chooses and then he's planned. And then the plan comes about on how they will be saved. Where infralapsarians would say, well, no, God sees them as sinners and saves them in that way. And so that's where you get your lapsarian view, which then comes to the matter in that question. So having a proper understanding of lapsarian, because they're right, you have to just deal with God's eternal decree. And when does that happen for it? So I haven't got that far in the debate, though.
Yeah. What's the right answer, Mike? Infra or supra?
I'm infra. I think it's but here's my caveat. I don't think the Bible's clear to say it's one or the other. And so
I don't know exactly where I would say I land, but I think I land more supra in the sense, or maybe I just don't understand it fully, because I would see that God is ordaining all things. And I mean, I don't know.
So the question is, does God ordain human fallingness before he ordains those whom he will save, or after he adorns, after he ordains those whom he'd be saved? So then the question is, does God see the person as a fallen creature? That is, he ordained them after the plan, after the determining the fall, or does he see it before he determines that? That's kind of how the debate line goes.
Yeah, I would say that. See, that's where, like, I would say he sees everything before. It's not like a progression of things.
Well, it's logical. So it's more logical and not because God knows all things. So it's not. It's trying to figure out the logical connections in all of these, not necessarily in a sense of temporal progression.
Yeah.
So
yeah, with that, whenever you get to it, but with that, I just figured it would be something we could probably touch on. I don't know how.
Maybe we should do a show on inference superlapsarian.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe we should, we could keep that clip aside. And
I mean, we can still talk about it. I think it is important, even in the extent of the debate, in the extent of the atonement. But it's not just necessarily a Calvinistic problem. The Arminians also have to deal with it.
Right. Well, that's one of the things that I don't think Christopher Connor. I said something to Christopher Connor the other day, and he was like, he said, let's do a live on it. And I'm like, okay, let's do it.
9 p.m. on YouTube.
but he it just I don't think they see through clearly the position that they even say they adhere to.
Yeah.
Because if you're saying that, well, God is ordaining these people, because I've asked, and you'll see in the debate, Romans 1:16 is not a John 3:16 catch-all like people use. And they'll say, well, you know, why does this person, because I even asked the question at the end, why does this person, like say you have two people, both hear the gospel, grow up in the same house, why does one receive and one reject it? You know? And their response was, well, that's the answer, one received and one rejected. Because the gospel, and they go to Romans 1:16, the gospel is the power of God unto salvation. So the gospel pricks everybody's heart. And they use Acts chapter 2, where the gospel pricks the hearts of the Jews. 3,000 souls are saved. And then in Acts chapter 7, Stephen being stoned, he preaches the gospel, tells them about Moses, goes through all this history. Their hearts are pricked, and they stone him to death. And so they say, see, look, God's pricking them with the gospel. Everybody gets their heart pricked. But you can have the choice.
They're not saved. Different wording in both places, it means something different.
Yeah. So I was listening to Michael Hollowell's introduction, and I'm sitting there, I was like, no one's arguing that part of the church is a collective whole. No, that's not the argument. The question is, does God know the faces of that collective whole or not? And like, there's times the sinner's like, dude, you're making a better argument for particular atonement than you are for your position. Did not God choose? I mean, he even said it. God chose Isaac over, I can't think of his name right now.
Ishmael.
Mm-hmm. Well, God chose it beforehand. Because when he talks about it, he's like, Ishmael's not going to be your son.
Yeah.
It's not the son of promise. God already knew who the son of promise was going to be. Yeah. And like, he's setting up this argument. No one's arguing that God doesn't elect a collective whole called the church, the people of God. The question and the debate is, does God know, does God select the faces in that group? And so there's one thing too. I thought one of the Calvinists could have pushed harder in Romans. I think it's the first guy. You're talking about Romans 9?
Yeah.
And
well, he told me, he said, when he saw we were doing the debate, he said, don't hold back. Don't hold back. Because when we were doing the debate review, because he's seen we were doing it, he said, hey, even me, if you got a critique, don't hold back. Just
I felt he could have pushed more in that, not just like go to like the Hebrew. So he kind of mentioned that when it came to Pharaoh, but go to the Hebrew. The Hebrew is undeniable. The verb tense is a verb tense of causation. That is the subject causes something to the object. And in the case with Pharaoh, God causes the heart of Pharaoh to be hardened. And the idea of to be hardened is in that tense. So God hardens Pharaoh's heart. And this is what God is telling Moses in Exodus 7. So I felt like he could push harder on that, because that's part of what Paul is going. Look, Pharaoh couldn't be saved. God was hardening his heart. And that God was then to use Pharaoh as an example of his justice.
Yeah. Yeah, I always find that passage.
Savior of the world, God the Son. And we are given this extraordinary description of him in his dual character of the mighty conqueror and yet the tender, gentle shepherd.
Who's listening to
picks him? Up the lambs and is so gently in the way in That's which gentle in the doctor. Way he leads those that are with young. There is the great proclamation of the gospel.
Who's but sharing now, it?
When that proclamation was
what?
Made,
what?
The children Dad, of Israel found stuff. It very difficult to believe it.
Oh, I was wondering why you guys were playing Martin Lloyd-Jones. How did that happen?
I wasn't playing Martin Lloyd-Jones. That was you. I called it, though. I know who it was.
I sat back down, and I'm like, why is this playing? I thought maybe you were, like, playing a clip. No. It's like...
It's okay. At least he's listening to The Good Doctor, and he
I must have clicked this thing or something.
More Baptist.
Actually, more he was Baptist. Baptist. He was Baptist, a Baptist? Though. He was Anglican, I thought.
No, he wasn't Anglican.
Oh, well, he's the best preacher of the 20th century.
Yeah, he was Baptist. He got mad at, that was the whole thing about with him and
Packer.
Packer and the Cross of Christ book.
Stott.
Yeah, that was the thing. Is that he was complaining that as a Baptist, Packer and Stott couldn't share the Eucharist or the Lord's Supper with him, but they could share it with the liberal Anglicans.
That's stupid.
That was just low joints. Billy Graham asked Dr. Lloyd-Jones to stand on the stage with him in a revival in London, and he told him no because you have heretics on the stage, and I'm not going to stand with heretics. That's Lloyd-Jones.
You got to love guys like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, dude.
Like, he gave this, you can read the sermon.
But who is he calling heretics, though? Who is he calling heretics?
Rome? They're like, yeah, there's like Roman Catholics and like liberals and stuff like that. I was paraphrasing, but that was the point. It was like you have these non-Christians, people who deny things with them. But that, you know, that was Billy Graham. Have, you know, a lot more open than that. But it was the first time. So they brought, I mean, this story, they brought Lloyd-Jones in to talk about Christian unity, and it's phenomenal. Is you can buy the lectures and read them, and they might even be online. And it upset John Stott so much. Usually there was no like commentating. He went on and delivered like an impromptu lecture against what he heard, or like against Lloyd-Jones. And Lloyd-Jones' basic message, if I remember right, it's been a couple of years since I've read it, was that only the gospel can unify. And if you don't have the gospel, you can't be you can't have fellowship. It was kind of his point. Well, he's saying this to all these Anglicans, and there's like liberals there, and Stott more ecumenical, just laid out. It was a big thing. Packer was there. He agreed with Stott. Even though theologically they were closer together, that would be the last time the doctor and John Stott and J.I. Packer would ever be seen together in public.
Wow.
It was quite the stir. I think Lloyd-Jones was right in what he was saying. But don't tell George that. George wouldn't mind that. I do kind of like the Cross of Christ from John Stott, but just don't tell George. He doesn't like Stott.
Stott a heretic or something?
He believed in annihilationism.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, but that's not... George wouldn't even call that heretical, though.
Annihilationism? Yeah,
he still doesn't like him.
Yeah.
Annihilationism's not heretical?
I mean, if you're going to go with stuff that's been denounced, it's not officially been denounced by the Catholic Church. Okay. Small C Catholic Church. There's obviously problems with it. Yeah. And a lot of times when you see it now, that's with a denial of like penal substitutionary terrorism or like that. But he did. I think he's useful.
Especially I got an Ephesians
commentary. Yeah, his commentary. Bible Speaks Today series. He's the New Testament editor for that.
Yeah, I picked it up at the thrift store. And the books.
Did I buy it? I think I bought it new for doing a study in Ephesians.
Mm-hmm. So it's good.
Yeah, I've enjoyed it. In fact, I have another commentary from the Pillar series by Peter T. O'Brien. They've had to pull that book because I found this out. I was reading Stott and then I read the Pillar commentary and like I read this sentence. I'm like, dude, I've read this sentence verbatim and it was in Stott. Like he quoted Stott but forgot to
give him the credit.
Give him the credit, which they had to pull all of his books. Because he was getting, he was advancing years. He'd forget where he got stuff, and he wouldn't quote it. So they had to pull it. So I have this commentary that I can't actually use for academic reasons. Like if I were to write an academic article, I couldn't quote it because it's been pulled, and it's no longer viewed as a valid source.
Yeah,
because it's plagiarized.
Who plagiarized Stott?
Peter T. O'Brien.
Oh.
That was a good commentary, too. I still have it. I'm going to have it on my Logos.
All right, guys. I think I'm going to take off and grab a bite to eat. Nathaniel's making me hungry over here.
Eating Chipotle and chewing ice.
Yeah. So, all right. I guess we will see you all again next week.